Welcome to the Breakout CEO Podcast, the show where ambitious founders and scaling CEOs share how they put insight into action and spark pivotal moments, bold moves, and powerful mindset shifts. From building technology and growing teams to navigating pressure and pushing through plateaus, this is where real leaders talk about what it takes to level up in both business growth and leadership skills. I'm Jeff Holman, attorney and founder of Intellectual Strategies. I work behind the scenes with scaling CEOs and get a front row seat to the decisions that drive breakout success. On this show, you'll hear directly from exceptional CEOs about their breakout moments so you can learn how they navigated the risks and opportunities while scaling a business from startup to success. Let's get started. Welcome back to the Breakout CEO Podcast. I'm Jeff Holman, and I am so pleased to be here today with John Richards. John, thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Thanks, Jeff. It's great being here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. I've got some of your background. I think the background could be the entire show with everything you've done. You've been in academia teaching entrepreneurship at BYU. You've been in corporate, maybe a while ago in corporate, building businesses and taking them through IPOs, it sounds. And you've mentored thousands, probably, of people through your, I think first it was your Boom startup, was it? And then now more recently, your Startup Ignition. And now your Startup Ventures, like you're just going all over the place. Did I get some of that right?
Yeah, you got some of it right. That's right. Yeah, no, I have mentored thousands, and it goes back to being a professor at Brigham Young University and mentoring student entrepreneurs. And then also just being an angel investor, you're always mentoring people. And then, yeah, I did a tech accelerator called Boom Startup and also now have an entrepreneur bootcamp called Startup Ignition Bootcamp.
Matt, so my very first question through all of this is, what is it that motivates you to do all of this? That's a lot. That's a heavy load to carry. A lot of stuff to get done and a lot of accomplishments along the way. What's the motivation behind it?
I just enjoy it. I got lucky in life where I was an entrepreneur with my first venture and did okay. And then the second venture went public, and that gives you enough freedom in life to choose what you want to do. And I really enjoy teaching and mentoring and helping people. I feel very fulfilled when I'm teaching and helping people understand things. And I get excited when I've learned something new or something that's meaningful to me to share it with others. And that's a real to be in that realm is just, it's very motivating, and I enjoy business and entrepreneurship and the topics around it. So I think it's just a passion and a zeal for the topic and the content, and then also sharing it with others. I just enjoy it. A lot of people ask me that, why do you do that? And maybe it keeps me young, because by saying I've done a lot of things, it's because I'm probably getting to be the old guy now. And some people call me OG. I guess that was supposed to mean original gangster or something like that. But I think for me, I just say that just means you're an old guy. So I've been around the block before. But I do sincerely love to I've helping people get through their entrepreneurial obstacles and problems, and then finding success is super rewarding.
Yeah. And I will say, I watched one of your episodes recently with Garrett Gee. And from your own podcast, and you're welcome to plug that because everybody should be listening to that podcast too. It's fantastic. But if I remember right, your son hid the fact from you that he was bringing on one of your former students who's had some success. And you could just see, even through the podcast itself, that you thoroughly enjoyed reconnecting. And
yeah, it was a total surprise because we were supposed to have a totally different guest, and I didn't know what was going on. I was thrown for a loop because he travels with that student who is Garrett Gee, Garrett Gee is just like super famous now with the Bucket List family and travels the world. So he doesn't get back to Utah very often. And when he does, I like to know about it so I can at least see him. But this was a total surprise.
The passion and the connection came through, and I just wanted to note that.
Yeah.
So having the passion behind it, you've still done all these things from teaching to corporate to mentoring to investing. Do you have like a through line for this, like a common thread? Is it just the passion, or how is it that you've found this path to be on versus probably one of many others you could be on?
I think there's a certain amount of ambition involved, a certain amount of I like to be with a team and be a rising tide lifts all boats kind of feeling, and be a participant in helping the tide rise. And it, again, it's just, it's fun. Entrepreneurship in the United States of America's ecosystem and culture and laws and everything make it so anybody can change the world with great products and services and be rewarded for it. It's just such a dynamic environment. Whether it's endorphins or whatever they call those, dopamine and all that type of stuff, I think it fires that all off.
That's fantastic. Here's my last softball question before we dive in, maybe into a breakout story of some sort. And I'm curious, and don't hold back on me here, are you one of the most influential mentors in Utah for startups?
I think some of the others that are very influential might, I don't know if they would say that about me. I don't know, but I think a lot of younger and startup people would. I mean, the track record's pretty strong, but I don't want to say that about myself. But yeah, I just came from a lunch where the fellow said he was running around being a mentor to entrepreneurs, and he would find entrepreneurs that didn't seem to understand what they're supposed to be doing and all this. And then there was a small group that really knew what they were doing well. And he found out that the common thread is they had been trained or mentored with me. And that was a really big compliment I got over lunch. And so that says something. I don't know if the numbers are the biggest of anybody, but I do feel when I mentor somebody, they get the real meat and they really know what they should be doing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hard to answer that.
You're not trying to make you take places relative to other people, but you're up there. I think you're up there. I've been in the industry for a little while on the legal side, seeing things happen. I've seen you around. I think I followed you for, I don't know, probably since maybe 2016, 17.
Yeah. I was asked by somebody just coming into my program and getting mentored, and it goes, "Hey, who have you mentored that ever did anything or was successful?" And then I went down, I said, "Oh," off the cuff in a text, and I started writing like 10 or 15, and they're like all the big famous unicorns of Utah that I was at the beginning of or helped or mentored them at the beginning. So, and that made me realize, oh my gosh, I have had an impact. So that's fun.
That's awesome. And I've seen maybe to draw that out just a little bit, I've seen from my position as an attorney, people with ideas come, right? They're like, I got this idea. I'm going to try this thing. I'm going to pivot. And it really, the ability to move quickly in Utah with the right skill sets is pretty phenomenal. So it's not easy. That's the wrong word, but it's possible to see some of these really smart people, you know, pivot through three or four ideas. And it's maybe not more than 3 or 4 years later that they've raised money and they've found product market fit and they're going from startup to scaling mode. And
yeah, so I think that's why Utah is like either the number one or number two state ranked economy. It's a pretty special place, and the culture here lends itself to that. Maybe there's less vices, and one of the vices is being addicted to business and entrepreneurship. I don't know, but Utah definitely is a special place in that regard. Matter of fact, people that come to our entrepreneur boot camp, which you're familiar with, Startup Ignition, when they come from out of state, and like our last cohort had 8 of the 24 from out of state. Wow. And they come here. We've had people come to the boot camp and realize there's something special here, and they actually move their family and their businesses to Utah. It's crazy.
Yeah. No, I think we see a fair amount of that. And it's because there's a culture here. There's a community, not just the culture, but the community that exists.
And people do the help here. There's people that will mentor and help. And there's pitfalls like in any market somewhere. But just overall, I was just with a lunch again with today with a South African person that just moved to Utah. And we were asking, why'd you choose Utah? Will you come here? Do you like it? How's it going? And he said, man, we love it here in the outdoors and how beautiful it is here. And then, because he could have chosen, he's representing an international company, and he could have chosen anywhere to live. And he came to Utah, and he says, and the people here are so nice. And I've had people tell me that people in Utah are so nice that they sometimes get suspicious the other way and go, they can't be that nice. There's something going on.
No, it's a very inviting, friendly community overall, I think. So in part to people like you and the community you've built.
Thank you for that.
So I'd love to jump into maybe a little bit of story or background around a breakout moment. And again, we could draw from probably some of your own personal experiences, probably any of a number of experiences of the people that you've worked with and mentored along the way. But for our audience, the concept here really is, there's a lot of CEOs going through the rough and tumble of building and scaling a company. And although everybody's on their own unique path, the experiences generally that people go through have some commonality, right? You might be doing them in a different order, but you're probably going to go through some of the same experiences that somebody else has already been through and that somebody else is going to go through later. So I think there's some value in sharing these breakout moments, kind of the where's the real strategic shift or that transitional moment to go from plateau to product market fit or whatever it might be. And I'd love to hear a story or two of yours that where you've been either experienced that and been that breakout CEO or helped transition somebody through that, because that's how people get from the normal everyday, I'm a startup founder to I'm a unicorn. I think you use the term elephant too. And you get to the point where you're something more than the average. And I'd love to hear about your experience there.
I'll tell one of my own if that's good. And if you want, I can tell about somebody I've mentored. But for me, I was actually pre-med in college. I was accepted to medical school and at the last minute decided not to go to medical school and instead went back to my home city of Seattle and got involved in the Yellow Pages industry because I was going to school when the old telephone company, which was called AT&T, it's not today's AT&T, it's the actual Ma Bell, as they called it, or the one that Alexander Graham Bell founded in the late 1800s, but it had become the largest, biggest, most monolithic corporation in the world. And the federal government of the United States broke it into 8 different companies to weaken it, to let competitors have a chance. And that was a very energizing time for a lot of entrepreneurs because you could go in and compete in the many business lines of the phone company. And I chose to compete in the Yellow Pages industry, which is a very lucrative advertising platform. And I got into the print Yellow Pages business. And while I was CEO of my own publishing company, I was very open to innovation and new things, such as it used to be black ink on yellow paper. And then all of a sudden said, what if we had white paper and used yellow ink and black ink and made the ads have a white background so they stood out on the page? And then what if we started using other colors and started doing 4-color printing and ads? And I was always at the cusp of those trends and leaning out and putting out books and doing things like that. Staying close to new technologies in my industry helped me see the future and take advantage of opportunities. And then the greatest one of all was when one day a young kind of techie nerd guy made an appointment to see me, and he was dressed in all black with a black sweater with a turtleneck hipster look. And he comes in and basically tells me, you're going to be out of business in 2 years. And I go, what? What do you mean I'm going to be out? We've grown 500% in the last 3 years. It's going gangbusters. And he goes, no, there's something coming that's going to wipe you out. And I go, what are you talking about?
And when was this time period?
In 1994.
Okay.
And he said, no, he goes, the internet. And I go, you mean that thing for scientists in universities? And to do research. And he said, no, there was just an attorney of all things. So you're an attorney. An attorney just did what we nowadays would call a spam, put out an email, because email was the killer app and it still remains one of the killer apps on the internet. And he put out a kind of a message to a whole group list of people and said he's a lawyer in personal injury and looking for any opportunities. And boom, he instantly got a case for $50,000 set fee to him on the settlement. And people go, you mean you can use the internet for commercial purposes? And so this guy visiting me said, yeah, the internet's going to be used for commercial purposes now. And obviously Yellow Pages is a database and you can put a database on it, it'd be very useful. And I started saying, yeah, in my company, we have computer systems and I can look up Yellow Pages and White Pages data really nicely on the terminals I have connected to my mini computer that runs my company. And I started getting the vision of what he meant, that someday people are going to be able to access Yellow Pages and White Pages data. Again, Yellow Pages is business data, White Pages was residential data, and be able to look it up on a computer device. And I just went off to the races on that, and I launched the first ever internet Yellow Pages. And I put my book's data up at an event that Bill Gates up in Seattle was holding called the Online Advantage trade show. And I went, got a booth and showed off my online Yellow Pages and people went gaga over it. And said, maybe there's a real business here. And I took about the next 9 months to hypothesize and devise a business plan. And I went to other publishers around the country. Since I was in the industry, I knew how to contact them and reach them. And I got about 40 publishers to say they would join forces with me and put their yellow pages up on the internet like I was doing. And that was the birth of my foray into being the father of internet yellow pages. And I then sold my print company off and went all in on the internet. And the rest is history. 2.5 years later, it went public on the NASDAQ and just changed things a lot. The breakout moment is when, first of all, making a decision to stay on top of new technologies affecting my industry. And then when finally one comes around that's going to be completely transformative, I glommed onto it and started experimenting with it and became an early leader in it. And that is a breakout moment for me that led to, we wouldn't be sitting here having this talk if I hadn't done that.
Yeah, maybe talking about something else, huh?
Yeah, or so. Not even being here. We never know where our life is the sum of all of our decisions.
Yeah. You got me super curious. This guy in all black, who did he turn out to be? Was he someone selling to you?
Yeah, young techie hipster that wanted to help me do it. And he probably did a little bit, but that relationship didn't really continue on because we had the ability in-house to do it. And my brother was part of my company and he was really a strong technologist and we got things built. And it's just fascinating. Yeah, that was because I was known as being a progressive person in my industry is why he would have contacted me, not an old school. A lot of people in our industry made a lot of money from paper publishing and they weren't open to new ideas, but I was.
They had the blockbuster mindset. They were all in on videos.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's super interesting. What was so you had the progressive mindset and somebody either knew that and came to you or happenstance met you and presented that to you.
I was routinely written up in the trade press for keeping track of and commenting on new technologies in our industry. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Was that kind of a purposeful endeavor of yours to make
sure
that
I was younger than most people in my industry. I was a really young CEO of a Yellow Page publishing company. So naturally I was more amenable and willing to take on and do new technology for sure.
Okay. And I'm curious, was the transition looking back, I had this idea and we did this and it worked. Was the path a little more rough than that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
because after I started doing it, other people thought they could start doing it. So there was a little competitive landscape. And then the rough and tumble or very exciting, crazy dot-com era. What happened was I worked on it for a year and a half. And then all of a sudden Netscape went public, which was the Mark Andreessen, the college student from the University of Illinois, he's now with Andreessen Horowitz, a very famous venture capital firm. But Mark Andreessen was a student at the University of Illinois, and he wrote a software program called Mosaic, which turned port 80 of the internet from a text-based system into a graphical user interface system so you could have graphics. And Mosaic gave birth to the internet being super powerful. And with that graphic interface. And then Silicon Valley heard about him, invited him out to Silicon Valley. They created the company Netscape, renamed Mosaic Navigator, and Netscape went public in 1996. And that's when the world changed and that gave birth to the internet era. And I was already up with my internet yellow pages and I just rode that wave and got a lot of attention. Right after Netscape went public, I had 10 major corporations offer to buy my fledgling internet yellow pages company. And I ended up merging in with some Microsoft people after I had been talking to Microsoft. Some Microsoft folks contacted me and said I should do a deal with them. And that's what happened. And we went public 2.5 years later.
Oh, that's fantastic. Is there something from that experience that still carries through today to what you teach to the groups that you mentor?
So much. Good and bad and ugly. Just, so
what to do, what not to do, all that type
exactly.
of stuff.
That's like a slogan we use in our boot camp, what to do and what not to do, because there's things to do and things to avoid. And they're absolutely. And then I've seen those patterns I got from that personal experience repeated in companies I invested in. So Omniture is a company that now is part of Adobe and it's called Adobe Analytics, but it was Omniture Analytics back in the day. I was an early investor in that. And I mentored the two founders that were very famous here in Utah. you know, Josh James and John Pastana, and I mentored them in the early days a lot. And they would fly up to Seattle even before I moved to Utah. They would flip to Seattle and mentored with them. And all of a lot of the things, the good and the bad and the ugly that I learned from my personal experience, I saw in those experiences. And you start really learning things. Like my son Tyler right now says, what my dad's really good at is pattern recognition. He can instantly hear what's going on and recognize the patterns and give really good advice. And that's really true, because when we're younger, like 25-year-olds, our brains actually operate faster than somebody at my age, which is around 60. But because I have pattern recognition, I can still outperform a 25-year-old in business and entrepreneurship, because I have the pattern recognition from years of experience. And I can see the first three or four elements of a pattern and know what the next 10 will be. And that's something you gain with experience. That can also trick you sometimes. You got to be careful, because there might be something so new in your pattern recognizing it, and it's actually going to be different. So you have to be really careful. But generally speaking, in terms of mentoring and giving advice and knowing what to do in situations, that's a very powerful mechanism, that how our brain works. And so that's why I continue to be a useful mentor even to 25-year-old entrepreneurs.
Yeah, that's probably also why sometimes I lose to older tennis players. They've got that, or in your case, pickleball players.
Yeah,
right? Exactly. The pattern recognition kicks in, and you're
I can't tell you how many times I've had a 25-year-old say, "My athleticism will cream you," and we'll bet $100 on the game, and I cream them in pickleball. And I go, you haven't played the sport very much, and just because you're a good athlete doesn't mean you can instantly do something really well.
Yeah, I've got a daughter who played college tennis just for a bit there. We went out, I was visiting her in Texas. She's doing a PhD in finance out there. Hey, let's go find a pickleball court. We went to play, and these, of course, two older women, I don't know their age, nor would I guess at it, just dominated us. We're like, oh, man.
That happens all the time. There's actually video spoofs on that very topic out on YouTube so much it's entertaining. But yeah.
It is entertaining.
Because you know the patterns. They hit a ball a certain way, and you know the pattern of where you need to hit it and how you need to respond. That takes experience. And in entrepreneurship, it's a learnable skill. And you need to learn the skill and experience. Just like you, I don't know if you remember for the time you sat through some of my training, which I think you come and attend, I believe.
I've meant to be in one of your boot camps, but I haven't made it through yet. I've come to other events though. Yes.
Yeah. But I talk a lot about surfing. Surfing's a really hard thing to learn, but it's all a learnable skill. Nobody's born with the ability to surf. You have to learn the skill, and entrepreneurship's very analogous to that. Yeah.
I've talked to my 16-year-old son, my youngest, said maybe next year, he's 15. So maybe when you're 16, maybe we'll go out and we'll spend a few weeks learning to surf.
It's really hard. I've tried it. It's really hard.
I have tried. It's extremely hard.
Yeah.
So
it's doable and it's teachable.
Yeah. So I'm curious, from all of that, you've gone down this whole path and you get to the point where you're teaching a lot of lean startup and even lean scaling techniques to all these other entrepreneurs out there. Is there some story about a breakout moment with one of the people that you've mentored where you've seen them maybe even recognize the pattern that they're in, perhaps one of the bad patterns or patterns that don't lead to productivity, and said, "Hey, let's get you out of that pattern and into this new pattern"?
Yeah, we're about 25 episodes into our Startup Ignition podcast. And so there's several stories from the guests we've had on there. So I'll just take one of those. One is Dustin Robbins, who was on a few episodes ago. And Dustin came to Startup Ignition, and he had a services business, and he wanted to know how to do it a little bit better, get it going more. But he had the idea for another business that was more of a product business. And he came, and on the first day, we really make sure that the idea that the participant, the entrepreneur who's participating in the bootcamp, that it's worthy of their time and that it really is a great opportunity to pursue. And so we spent a lot of time on that in the first day. And it was really interesting to watch him go through that day, about 8 hours of training on how to tell if an idea is worthy to spend time on and that it can become a great opportunity and that there can be potential for product market fit. And so he comes in with these two different ideas, but he absolutely thought the services business, which was going to be a combination videography and search engine optimization, so make videos to go on the internet and optimize them in search, and as a service to help other B2B service business. And his other one was called Corporate Traditions, which was selling to businesses certificates to hand out to their employees to get a turkey at Christmas time. That's all it did. Okay. And that made him a little extra money on the side, but he really thought the real great business was the one that was the SEO video combination company. After the first day, he realizes with the training that it was flip-flopped, that the other...
It's the turkey business.
The SEO business with videography coupled together actually sucked. And the turkey business was a winner. And
Why was that?
First of all, services business, you're mostly exchanging your time for money.
Oh, I know.
Like lawyers do, right? And so if you want to double revenues in a year's time, it's hard to do because you've got to get double the billable hours. And an attorney or a consultant or a CPA, they all sell their time. And when you're doing service business, you're generally doing that. And the clients can be very demanding. And you can make a good living at it, but you don't really create an asset company that's valuable to sell to others. But product-based businesses are inherently scalable, and you can make a business that doesn't need you to stay on for it to be really valuable. And so he recognized that in the first day. And I said, when he told me about the two businesses, I said, ding, ding, that other business is way better. And it was just making little spending money for him on the side. But he jettisoned the other business and went all in for Corporate Traditions. And that's been several years ago now. And he's sitting with a company north of $30 million revenue and just extremely doing well. And it's an incredible success story. And that's because he chose the right vehicle by having the skill to choose and know which are make for better opportunities. Not all ideas and opportunities are equal. Some are way better than others, and there's lots of factors and decision points that go into that. And we teach that super thoroughly, because trying to execute and scale a bad idea is how you fail. It's not good.
Yeah.
And so you need to start with a really winning business idea that has very high potential for getting to product market fit and a validated business model. And that Corporate Traditions was perfect. And he's a real believer in the processes we teach. And he's also constantly telling everybody, don't skip steps. Because one of the things that's important is that one of my pet peeves in life is that, I know Lean Startup. I know what it is. And they think Lean Startup is just what the word MVP, minimum viable product, that they've heard. Yeah. Oh, as long as I just build a minimum feature set, but a real product and get it out there, I've been practicing Lean Startup. But actually building an MVP is the final last step of the Lean Startup process. The Lean Startup process is a doctrine, a dogma of many steps of how to become an entrepreneurial scientist and really do a lot of things. You need to earn your right to build your product by doing these first steps. It's a very involved process. And a lot of people just give it superficial recognition. Oh yeah, I'm a lean startup practitioner because I built a very simple product. No, you shouldn't even be building a product yet. You're not ready to build a product. And there's lots to learn from that. Anyway, Dustin and Corporate Traditions is a great example of that was a pivotal moment. His life is wildly different than it would have been had he stayed with the services business.
Yeah, that's amazing. And those are the skills you're teaching in your Startup Ignition boot camp.
Then I got to remind everybody, the first thing I do in my boot camp is I say, okay, in the next 3 days, you're going to learn a lot of principles, a lot of things, what to do and what not to do. And many of you are going to become many multimillionaires. There's 25 of you in this room on average. Within 5 years, 4 of you are going to be multimillionaires. So who volunteers for that job? And they all raise their hand. Yeah. And then I say, the first thing I could tell you, when that happens to you, it's about a 50-50 chance that your life is going to be ruined. And they go, what do you mean? And I go, more than half of the people I've helped become multimillionaires, they lose their family, they get divorced, and they're very unhappy. And I said, part of this is that you don't have that happen to you because that's not worth it. And then we have to remind them to keep their head on straight and do things right as they go down that path. And so anyway, a lot of things involved in what we teach.
Yeah. Yeah, a whole other side to entrepreneurialism for sure. Yeah. This has been fascinating, and I'm mindful of your time, but I'm curious if there was one overarching thing, and maybe it's something you've shared already. Maybe it's something additional. What's one of those things that you would leave for every scaling CEO? If you're going to do something and you want to scale, like follow this principle or...
Yeah, scaling CEOs, I'll give you this. Because I come from a lean startup perspective and the startup world, I've also seen a case where founder CEOs are very good at conducting lean startup and they actually validate their business model, find product market fit. And they, when they've achieved that moment, which is a great accomplishment, and they've been very lean, and lean doesn't just mean financial frugality. It means lean in terms of not doing scaling activity prematurely. And they've been very good at it. And then all of a sudden, they get in and say, oh, okay, now I've figured it out. Now it's time to scale and grow. It turns out you can also scale lean. And there's a great book by Ash Mora, the author, called Scaling Lean. And you can also take the lean startup principles into the scaling phase of a business. You don't need to be wild and reckless with increasing your spend and your expenses and losing control of financial aspects of your company. You can also scale lean. And one of the real principles in doing that is there's a hidden step in between nailing it and scaling it. Nailing your business model is what we say, and then scaling it. So you nail it, scale it. There's an in-between step called build. What does that mean? That's the building the infrastructure to support the weight of scaling activity. Many CEOs go into scaling without having the necessary infrastructure in place to support the scaling activity. And then when they start scaling, which requires systems, and the right people sitting in the right seats on the right bus and all of that, they haven't built all that, and they start doing scaling activity, and then their company crashes because they haven't prepared the company for scaling activity. So you don't just nail it, then scale it. You nail it, then build infrastructure, then scale it on top of a sturdy infrastructure. It's the same thing. We don't just go frame a house on ground, we do it on a foundation of concrete. So
yeah.
The building activity is that you've got a great plan. We figured it out. We've nailed our business model. We know what our product market fit is. Now we're going to go put in a great foundation. Then we're going to build the house. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense. I've talked to some founders before because I work with some first-time founders, some second-time founders, some funded founders, some bootstrapping founders. I'm like, if you're bootstrapping versus investors, like your foundation has to be different. Your legal foundation, your business foundation, you don't necessarily have the funds to build a tower and then put a foundation on after the fact. If you're
bootstrapping. Yeah, and let me give you a really prime example. If you really want some hard to your listeners, viewers, for instance, one of the first things that happens in a company that starts to scale is the CEO founder says, oh, I'm going to hire some salespeople. Then they hire salespeople and they'll tell me, yeah, I hired four salespeople. I hired one and then I went to four and all of them suck. They can't sell anything. And I even went out with them and showed them how to sell, how I sell and can sell. And I got sales and while they couldn't get sales. And I turned to that CEO and I go, no, you suck. And they go, what do you mean? And I go, you're a founder. You can be on a sales call and you can pivot and say whatever you want in the moment to get sales. You can get what we call brute force sales. You can say and do anything. You know what to say and what to do in that call to get a sale.
You're the ultimate salesman.
When you hire an account executive salesperson, you don't want them. They can't say whatever they want. They can't make up things on the fly. They can't promise that the tech team will do this or that for that client. You have to codify your sales system. You as the founder need to go sell customers and then put into a sales system how to sell your company's product and your company's culture. And you have to then hire a salesperson and teach them how to do that and say, here's the system for it. You expected a salesperson to come in with no system and sell just as well as you, and that never is going to happen. I see this constantly where emerging companies hire and fire and hire and fire entire sales teams, multiple iterations until they figure out they need to codify what the founder has. The founder's job is not to be the end all be all most important person in the company. The founder's job is to figure out how to sell, how to onboard and activate, how to provide customer service and retain customers, and then be able to teach it to non-founders that come in and repeat on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, the same process and just crank the machine. There you go.
Makes perfect sense. I just need 7.5 hours more of this, and then I'll complete
day one. Come to the boot camp. You're a supporter of the boot camp. You're invited to come.
I will find a time. When is your next boot camp, by the way?
This coming week is the next one. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of this next week. Yep.
Is it?
Yeah. We got a couple of open seats, so you can come.
Okay. Let me look at my calendar.
I know it's tough, but yeah, you would really pick up a lot. And I think it's helpful. We almost every cohort of ours, which has 20 to 30 people and has at least one lawyer in it every time. So.
That's because all the lawyers are looking for how to get out of that.
Yeah. A lot of lawyers.
Business model.
My next door neighbor is a lawyer turned entrepreneur, and he became Ernst & Young's Entrepreneur of the Year in Utah.
Very cool. Very cool. I will check it out right after this.
Jeff, thanks for having me on there. And I want to also thank you as somebody in the ecosystem for the work you've done with your intellectual strategies. Are you still calling it that?
Yep.
And what you've done, IP law is the most expensive area of law for startups usually. It's also one that they don't do right in their frugality. They chintz on. And you've helped make it more affordable. You've helped them be able to do it more for themselves. I'm aware of that. And it's a very important contribution to the entrepreneurial ecosystem because, and I'm not just talking patents either. I see more problems often with trademarks than patents these days.
Which ultimately might be more valuable assets in the end of it all.
Yes, and also very costly because I've had multiple people that I've mentored that will do their first production run on a product. Let's say 5,000 products that cost them $80 a product.
Yeah.
And they then get a cease and desist from a big company saying they are doing a trade name infringement and they have to throw all the product away.
It's extremely well branded with somebody else's brand.
Yeah. But I actually teach a little bit saying it's more likely for most of you that you'll have a trademark problem than you will have. My own Startup Ignition Bootcamp had a trademark issue and I had to have a law firm defend me and I won out and I got the right to the national trademark for my name Startup Ignition. But I had one really big person give me a cease and desist and then another woman, but we worked through it and we actually won out and I got the right to it, which is really good. So anyway, that's a serious area. And I didn't want to go forward with what I'm doing without knowing that my brand is good.
Yeah. I appreciate you mentioning that. And I'm of course, 100% in alignment with everything you just said.
Yeah. And I just wanted to give you some kudos on that.
I really appreciate that. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on, John. Thank you for taking some time out of your day. And I will look into the boot camp. And till next time, thanks to all the audience members here that are listening to this now and later. We're having fun putting this together with the Breakout CEO podcast. And until next time, take care. Thanks for listening to the Breakout CEO podcast. If today's conversation brought value or sparked ideas, I'd love for you to share this episode with a founder or leader in your network. If you're a scaling CEO with a powerful breakout story or an insight to share, make sure to apply to be a guest on our podcast at go.intellectualstrategies.com. Also, be sure to follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And if you enjoy the show, a rating or a review goes a long way. Our mission is to promote the stories of breakout CEOs in scaling SaaS, e-commerce, and tech companies to equip peer CEOs with valuable perspectives and confidence. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of The Breakout CEO. I'm Jeff Holman, and I'll see you next time.